The Radio Academy Festival 2023. Sound Connections.
Hello and welcome to the Radio Academy podcast. I'm Sean Thorne and this is the first part of our Radio Festival special where we chat to some of the industry leaders that gave talks at this year's event. The theme of this year's Radio Festival was Sound Connections, so the conversations we had were built around three things: how we connect with audiences of today, how we're innovating our connections with audience through the emergence of new platforms, and also the importance of connecting with those across our industry and just generally having a lovely time at events like the Radio Festival. First up, we're going to bring you Edward Adu's conversation with Steve Lamacq. This year, Steve was on the main stage with Joe Wiley as they looked back on 30 years of connecting music to audiences at the BBC.
It's Edward Adu. I've got to big him up and call him a legend. Steve Lamacq, how you doing, sir?
Thank you very much for the description. I'm good. Yeah, I'm very good.
Lots to ask you. And one of the main things, it's about being relevant and tapping in to the audience. I suppose I've always referred to the audience as friends. And how have you managed to remain relevant, over more than 30 years?
I think there's part of the audience which has grown up with us. There's part of the audience now, the younger end, who are the kids of the people who grew up with us. And in the middle, I guess it's really just you're always trying to see your program through the eyes and ears of people who are listening. And it's made a lot easier, that job, by going to so many gigs, because you're standing amongst your audience all the time and you're noticing the things that they're into, the music they like, the things they're talking about, the opinions they have, and you absorb all that from you take from the audience so you can give back to the audience.
Do you still maintain the same ethos now? There's various platforms. You've got Spotify, Bandcamp, so many places where people can go to. How can you compete with all those other platforms?
I think with us, I would like to think it's trust, and people know I don't really go over the top all the time, but when I do, it must mean something. And I think that's how we've built a relationship with an audience who've sort of grown to trust us. If they hear me saying, I think this is really, really, really good, because I don't say it that often.
It's all down to loyalty?
Yeah, a little bit of that. But I think that relationship with somebody who has brought you some good things in the past and appears to have the same sort of attitude to music or taste in music as you do, you can't get that out of an algorithm, I'm afraid.
The Radio Festival, Radio Academy, these sort of yearly sessions, have you been to any previously, or is this your first time?
I haven't been to this for about 5 or 6 years, I think. It's really interesting. There's so many, old faces here. And it's nice catching up with people, actually. I might do it more often.
Next year? You come to next year?
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
What would you say was your highlight back then when you first came to one of these festivals? What was your highlight? Can you remember?
The very first time I came to the Radio Festival was, I mean, years ago now, and I remember Nicky Campbell interviewing Bruno Brooks about Bruno's brand new internet radio station and drilling down into Bruno's figures of how many people were listening. And I thought, that's cruel. It's true, but it's Bruno was, obviously giving it large.
This is
the future, and your analog radio is dead, and this is where it's going. And Nicky Campbell, don't think believed him, but I mean, it was to actually, what you don't want is just, people blowing smoke up each other's arses, and that certainly wasn't the case of that.
Steve Lamacq, thanks for the time.
Thank you.
Big thanks to Steve for chatting to us on the Radio Academy podcast. Our next guest was a part of the ARIA stage. This stage was dedicated to those who picked up gold in this year's ARIA Awards. Here's Akila Rodriguez, who is chatting to Mohit Bakaya. Mohit is the controller of BBC Radio 4, and Radio 4 were this year's gold winners of Best Station at the ARIAs.
How many times have you been to the Radio Academy Festival now? Can we call you a patron yet?
Oh, God, I am a fellow, actually. I got a fellowship last year. Hilariously, Lorna Clark announced it, and halfway through the citation, I was listening going, hey, whoever like this is, he's got great taste in music. And then I realised it was me. It was like, really, oh God, what an idiot.
Well, you clearly have a really great skincare regime, because when I say that you've been in the radio industry for a few decades, you definitely don't look it, that's for sure. But I did wonder, through your time here, you've seen various different eras of audio, and wondered how throughout that time that you still managed to connect with audiences.
It's very interesting. I mean, you're right. If I think about the first radio festival I came to, which must have been, at least about 15, 20 years ago, such a different crowd. You know, and that's one of the things, that, you know, the excitement of kind of the way audio has changed, the whole podcast industry, means you just got a really different bunch of people are now in the room. And that, you know, means that you do have to really start ensuring that you're thinking differently. And I'm, you know, one of the things you have to do when you do a job like mine is know your limitations. You know, I'm a dinosaur. I know certain things, and I don't know a lot of other things. And so you just, the way you connect is by surrounding yourself with people who do know those things and can help you out.
Saying the modest route. I like that very much, Mohit. But it must have been quite a transition. And I'd say, just from as a listener, Radio 4 has been quite a great station at keeping great linear content and also cornering the sounds market. So how has that transition been?
It's a really interesting, it's what I was trying to say on stage with Emma a little bit. It's a really interesting dance, because exactly as you say, you're trying to keep your live radio strong, because actually at the end of the day, you have to give people a reason to turn the radio on now, because they can get, you know, the phone you're holding is where we can get everything now, right? So why turn the radio on? Why listen to the Today programme or Woman's Hour or Front Row or PM or any of those brilliant live programmes? So you want the crackle of live radio and the jeopardy. And that's about not quite knowing what's going to happen next. So you've got to keep that going. But at the same time, you know, it's kind of wonderful that people, and, you know, and our figures show this, can listen to our stuff when it suits them in their busy lives. There's so much time pressure on their lives. And that's why we've really built up our, you know, I think, you know, something like 9 out of the top 10 programs in sounds are Radio 4 programs. I mean, it's something I think people don't realize how big we are in sounds. And that's because what we've got is all this great content, like Desert Island Discs and In Our Time and Add to Playlist and all the brilliant story, you know, kind of narrative storytelling things like Coming Storm and, you know, British Cult and so on. And all those things can be listened to when people are going out for a jog or whatever. And so just being able to take Radio 4 with you is a great thing. And then the tricky bit is getting the balance right. So you don't allow the podcasting to overwhelm the live listener, and you don't let the focus on live stop you being really creative in the on-demand space. But the truth is, we're really lucky. I mean, what an amazing playground Radio 4 is. We have to do both those things. And we have an audience which is so much bigger than any other speech station. Sometimes I think people forget, you know, that, you know, our breakfast show is, you know, 5 times bigger than LBC's. It's 17 times, no, 22 times bigger than Times Radio's. And I think sometimes people forget, in the world where it's become, as you say, it's changed so much, we're still by far the biggest station.
You mentioned some, you know, timeless classic shows there, Desert Island Discs. Obviously, you talked about The Archers a bit earlier. You've got programmes that have been going for so long that are just iconic. Do you still strive to find new listeners and make new connections?
Oh, God, yeah. And, you know, we have a... Well, I think we have to. I mean, that's our job. I mean, if we don't... I mean, I genuinely believe, you know, obviously I've been around for a long time around Radio 4, but I started around Radio 4 when I was in my 20s. And I genuinely believe there are lots of people out there who want the content that Radio 4 does, want that intelligent curiosity, want seriousness, but with a playful way. And as I was saying, I think there is a way of bringing the Radio 4 content to people which recognises their need to make sense of the world, which is our motto, but in a way which doesn't feel like it's all very buttoned up and serious and austere. And that's what I've been trying to do, is make it feel more approachable, more playful, less buttoned up, a little less of the, you know, the dinner jacket, a little bit more kind of relaxed, but without losing the seriousness and the kind of intellectual ambition. And I think, I genuinely think that's what people want. I think this idea that all young people want are kind of music stations is not true. It's just not true. And, you know, I don't think people divide their lives that way. You know, they want music when they feel like they need music, and they want to understand what's going on in the world, or some drama or comedy when you know, they're in the mood for that. And we just have to make sure we give them the right sort of speech content when they're looking for it.
I suppose when you've been around the industry as long as you have, and I say that as a compliment for sure.
It's 30 years next month.
Wow.
That I will have been in the BBC.
Do you know everybody? You must know everybody.
Well, no, because one of the lovely things is how many new... I mean, as I say, the thing which is the industry has just changed so much in the last 5 years. So there are constantly new people I'm meeting and new indies I kind of bump into are doing amazing things with other suppliers, other kind of outfits like Audible or Spotify or whatever. So, no, I mean, it's... And it's partly why I suppose I retain my enthusiasm, because it doesn't feel like I do know everybody. There's always someone new to meet and always a new kind of creative conversation to be had.
Which I suppose is what's great about places like this with the Radio Academy Festival.
Absolutely. I love the festival. It's great. There'll be some brilliant sessions today and you just get to bump into some of the most remarkable people. And radio's got them all. It's great.
Big thanks to Mohit for chatting to us on the Radio Academy podcast. We're going to stick with the ARIA stage as Simon Lederman talked to Helena Merriman. Helena created and presented Room 5, which was a series where Helena interviewed people who, like her, had their lives changed by a diagnosis. Room 5 won the ARIA's award for Best New Radio Programme, and here's her chat with Simon.
So this is Simon Lederman. We're at the Radio Academy Festival 2023. We're in the Treasure Room at the Royal College of Physicians, and I'm delighted to say we are joined by Helena Merriman, who's just come off stage talking about a number of things in the world of radio, in particular Room 5. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm feeling footloose and fancy free now I've done it. I can enjoy the rest of the day.
It's out of your system now. Can I ask you this? I'm sure this is a completely naive question. Room 5, was that a consulting room? What was Room 5?
Actually, that's a very good question. So that was the room where I was given my diagnosis at a doctor's surgery, where I was told I had a degenerative hearing condition, which, of course, in this industry was not the best news. And that was the spark for my podcast, Room 5.
And one of the things we've been speaking about, I'm really interested in, is about reaching audiences, particularly those we have now. You know, you've worked in the industry. You would have seen people almost being trained to have empathy, because some people, sadly, we are lucky, I think we have it, but don't have it. For you, your audience has to have empathy with the stories you're telling.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think there are a whole load of things that a lot of people do naturally to try and keep audiences excited. There are techniques that we borrow from the world of film and TV and sort of basic storytelling techniques. There's a line from Alfred Hitchcock, which I always keep in my mind, which is that there is no terror in the bang, only in the anticipation of it. And for me, that's something that I'm thinking about all the time when I'm structuring or writing something. How do I increase those feelings of anticipation and trepidation? How do I make something as visceral as possible so that people listening cannot switch it off?
And you've told very famously in the very first series of Room 5 your own story. And one of the things I was interested in about that is writing narration for an audience about yourself almost as a third person.
Yes, very odd. Wouldn't necessarily want to go through the experience again, but also I learned a lot doing it. I learned a lot about how vulnerable you can feel when you're the subject of a podcast, but also it can feel very special too to have a story about yourself out there that you author. And for me as a journalist, it has completely changed the conversations that I have with people. I put the story out about my own diagnosis at the end of series one. I then made series two, and the conversations I had for series two were so different because people had heard my story, and so there was a real shared vulnerability that helped me make those very intimate connections with people.
And I think you established on stage that you're in an area that AI cannot breach, because AI doesn't have empathy and it doesn't...
That's what I'd like to think.
So in terms of the future, in terms of creating content that future audiences and future innovations would like or maybe would understand, do you think it's going to change, or are we always going to be the same? Are we always going to be the same recipients who want that backstory, or will we change what we need based on the AI that we're presented with?
I think we'll very soon and seamlessly enter a world where we will have AI sort of blended through the kind of journalism that we listen to. I use AI all the time, as most journalists do. I use transcription tools, I use parts of my iPhone to do things. And I think what we'll soon start to see is that where it comes to newsrooms who are doing the kinds of stories where you're perhaps sort of churning out or retelling stories that already exist on the web, of course AI will do that, and AI already is doing that very successfully. But I think what AI can't do, in a way, by its very nature, is have a backstory that enables it to do what I would call human journalism. So journalism involving one human with a backstory, with a past, with a certain kind of expertise that gives it the qualifications to call up a minister and hold them to account, or interview someone about something in their lives and make comments about something that happened in their own lives. I mean, of course they can create AIs with fake backstories, but where there is that fake backstory, people will know that. So it just doesn't have the same quality. So I'm all for AI. I'm very excited about how I can use it in the future as a journalist. But I'm also very confident that there are whole swathes of journalism, empathy-centred journalism, human-centred journalism, investigative journalism, that are very, very safe.
And just lastly, there are lots of people from the radio industry here. There will be people thinking, thank goodness what you did got commissioned, because there will be many other stories that may not have done. What do you think are the benefits of big events like this where the radio community get together?
Oh, I think they're immense. I mean, I've been going to lots of other events like this, the podcast show, this one. And I think it's that sharing of ideas that challenge the way that you have already done something. I mean, we can all get stuck in a rut. That's how our brains work. We're creatures of habit. Our brains like to do things the same way over and over and again. And I think the value is going to talks and hearing about the way people do their craft, or finding out about, you know, the next AI tool that could be really, really helpful for the way we make things. So I think it's that bumping up against different ideas, because, you know, we all live in echo chambers now. I think that's one of the biggest threats in a way to the kind of journalism that is most useful, that the best kind of journalism throws ideas up on you that you've never thought of before. And as we increasingly live in echo chambers where our social platforms all tell us things we already know, it's harder to do that. So events like this are great for throwing up ideas that we might not have thought of.
Helena Mayer-Roman, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
So finally, we're going to head over to the Connections Chamber, which was the third of the Radio Festival stages. Imogen Brewer was there and caught up with Kat Agostinho, who is one of the co-founders of Imagine Insights. This is a company that offers insights into Gen Z or Gen Z audiences. And Kat was in conversation with Tito Magaji-Williams and Adriana Deaconescu. And here they all are discussing how the audio sector can best engage Gen Z.
It's Imogen here, and I am at the Royal College of Physicians, and I am joined with
Adriana,
Tito,
and Kat,
who have just done a fabulous talk all about Gen Z. So, firstly, let's chat about why your topic was great for current audiences.
I believe that this is a massive issue of relevance to young people and Gen Z audiences around the UK and further. Right now, there's such a crisis in listenership, and I feel like we really need to engage people with interesting topics. The world is on fire, there's a climate crisis, there's so many things going on. So it's a matter of how do we take these established creative mediums and use them to really reach the people that want to hear about these things.
For me, I think, especially as a part of Gen Z, we need to be more engaged in these conversations, because like the people in power these days are not Gen Z, but like we are the main part these days. So I feel they should just listen more to what we have to say as well, and take us in and like put us into like, and especially when we're looking for jobs, like they should like, you know, have like that power as well, you know, like getting jobs in like different industries that we can actually make some change.
To be honest, listening to Gen Z is what you have to do if you are going to elicit change. So you can't create content for Gen Z if you haven't spoken to Gen Z first.
And the topic we've just spoke about is all about Gen Z. And how is it going to innovate connections with, you know, future audiences and platforms? What is Gen Z going to be able to do to be able to do that?
I think what we can do is just like first just speak up, you know, just like don't be afraid, because I feel like it's hard to do that, but it's just like if we just get out there and speak about these like issues, like I hope like more people would like actually listen and take us seriously. I feel that's a big problem, like we're not taking seriously that much, because I think maybe we're like entitled to all of these things, or like this is like, you know, we don't know that much, we don't have that much like life experience. But I think that's not true, because we've evolved, like the society's been, it's not like how it's been like last generations, like my parents' generation. I feel like I've learned much more of like, because I had a lot of resources. So that's why I want to say is like, I think like we just have to put more resources out there and just like update them with like our informations as well.
And finally, why is it so important to be making connections at events like this, like the Radio Festival? What impact can festivals like this have for the future of Gen Z?
I would say that it's so important to bring multiple voices and different perspectives together into a space like this. This festival is doing an amazing job in bringing all the different viewpoints, strategies, tactics, backgrounds and experiences into one place where all these experiences can kind of overlap and coalesce. right now we need so many different approaches to tackling the issues in terms of getting people listening and building inroads of the Gen Z audience and diverse audiences and women and the LGBTQ plus community. There's so many different audiences that would be best reached by a multi-pronged approach. And things like this festival are so great for helping everyone share their learnings and share their skills and hopefully just make a better radio and podcast and audio landscape.
For me, I think what I like this kind of events is because it offers just the space to just connect with other people. And because for me, like as I'm a recent graduate and I'm trying to get myself into the industries I'm interested in, it's like hard to like find people, as like I'm not from here, I don't know anybody. I'm just trying to like find like-minded people. So I think places like this is the best for those, that kind of thing. So I think just the more the better.
And just finally, if, you know, the bosses or the heads are listening, what could they do to, you know, target Gen Z? What could they do to, you know, involve Gen Z more?
Can I be real with you, bosses? You need to employ us.
Yes, I agree. Give us jobs.
You need to, there's no other situation where you would have an audience you desperately want to reach out to or desperately want to understand without having said people in the room with you or said a very solid understanding of said people. You can't go in blind of Gen Z. You can't throw things at the wall and hope they will stick. You need a strategic and consistent strategy of employing us, working with us, being in our communities, understanding how we operate, researching, talking, all of these approaches and properly getting a grounding with the Gen Z audience. And only then will we start to work together and we can make some great content together and you can really get Gen Z's listening to what you're putting out. So employ us.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the only thing I want to say, yeah, just like give opportunities, any kind of opportunities, and like specific for Gen Z as well, because we need them.
And I would add that there's a lot of misconceptions around Gen Z in the workplace, and actually I'd flip that and say, so yes, they may want a better work-life balance. Is that a bad thing? Shouldn't we be changing what's happened before? So I think really do employ them, listen to them, but also be very willing to make changes in your business. Well, I work with lots of Gen Z, as you know, our whole business is focused on Gen Z, but also employ Gen Z. Our business has changed for the better because we are listening and hearing and developing and making plans for the future.
The Radio Academy Festival 2023, Sound Connections.
So that's it for this part of the Radio Festival special on the Radio Academy podcast. We've got loads more from the festival to bring you. Ramesh Ranganathan chatted to us, Stephanie Hurst, Pete Black, Khalid Mir, Manveen Rana, loads and loads of other speakers from this year's Radio Festival. Finally, a massive thank you to the podcast team who helped us out with this one. Edward Adu, Simon, Akila, and Imogen, thank you so much for volunteering your time to bring everyone these conversations. Absolute legends and really, really lovely people. And we'll be back with part two of our Radio Festival special very, very soon.